listening to the Behind the Whistles podcast with Des Roach and Steve Conroy in association with Roxburgh Group. If you need insurance, Roxburgh have you covered.
Good afternoon and welcome to Behind the Whistles episode 3 with me, your host James Sweeney, in partnership with Roxburgh Insurance Group. If you need insurance, the good people at Roxburgh have you covered. I'm joined as always by former SFA Category 1 referees Des Roach and Steve Conroy. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hello.
It's good to have you back, Steve. I understand you were running a half marathon for charity last week.
Half marathon, half dead. Obviously was ill-prepared for it, but my wife and her friend Amanda are doing a charity challenge this year. They're doing the Manchester Marathon in a few weeks. Sam's raising money for Beatson. So Alan and I tagged along again just to keep company. But, I was not prepared enough for it.
Brilliant. No, great cause, I understand.
Yeah, Beatson, prompted by one of our work colleagues. Thankfully, she's come through it, but our work colleague's taking a recurrence of cancer, and that prompted raising money for the Beatson.
Great cause. Great people. I lost a friend recently in his early 50s to cancer. It's a cause that's close to many of our hearts. If you've got a link for fundraising for that, then please send across and I'll put it on to the official X page.
That'd be brilliant. All that stuff's way beyond me, but I know there's a link, so I'll forward that on. All donations, thanks in advance.
Thank you, Steve. Okay, guys, a lot to discuss. I think we're going to just go straight into the weekend's games because there is so much within that. I'm going to start off by going over the Motherwell versus Aberdeen game, in which Motherwell had a goal chopped off. It was the equaliser that was chopped off. I believe it was a handball review by VAR. Who wants to pick up this one first? We'll go to you, Steve. Do you want to give your thoughts on this one first?
Okay. There's so many different facets to this one. And, you know, for it being such a, you know, innocuous and inverted commas incident, there's so much involved in this. The main one being that in this day and age, that could even possibly be considered as a handball. The player clearly went up to header it, made a complete mess of the header, but inadvertently hit his arm. He had no intention of playing it with his arm. He was jumping up for it, but his arm was unnatural, in inverted commas, so it came off his arm. So in this day and age, yeah, that's a penalty. In the real world, it should never be a penalty. But the fact that it took 4 or 5 minutes for anybody, for VAR to bring that to anybody's attention, is shocking. We've one of our pals on one of our WhatsApp groups was there as a Motherwell supporter, and said that nobody in the crowd had the faintest idea what was going on. Nobody claimed. Nobody said a thing. Nobody fussed, but still VAR chose to get involved for a nonsense decision. It's appalling.
Des?
I can't disagree with it. The Aberdeen player went up for the ball. The ball's hit him. He's not hit the ball.
You said Aberdeen player. Was a Motherwell player going up with the Aberdeen player yet?
Oh, sorry. All right, okay. The Theo Bear one. Yeah. No, Theo Bear had no... He had no intention of handling the ball. It was absolutely ridiculous. And then the ball then came down and the Motherwell player struck the ball absolutely fantastically into the goal. But I think it's overly harsh to go back looking to that. And I think Stuart Kettlewell referenced it saying, as long as it didn't hit the player who then struck the goal, it shouldn't count, because it happened to Motherwell against them previously. So for me, that's re-refereeing the game, and that's not what VAR's there for. VAR is not there to re-referee the game. Unfortunately, VAR is re-refereeing the game.
I thought Stuart Kettlewell's comments were at the time and heat of moment, but on reflection, he's actually spot on. And I can understand his frustration because, as I said, he's been told one thing over one incident, but against, and then four, it then doesn't stand. I can understand that inconsistent approach, and then when you're told one thing and then it happens to you that no longer applies, very frustrating. I don't see the need for VAR to intervene in that, and I know that you have got quite strong views because we discuss obviously outside of the podcast about when VAR gets involved, and we've discussed about the fact that we feel as if we're kind of getting to the stage where they're just looking for any excuse to chop goals off.
Yeah.
Well, we've said VAR now is just a device for finding fancy ways to disallow goals. Their justification will be that they got the right decision, because, again, stress it, that should, in a sane world, that should never, ever in the slightest be considered as a handball. That's in the sane world. Unfortunately, we don't live in the sane world just now. So I agree that that probably was a handball. But, you know, Des's phrase, if I'm the only one in the stadium that sees it or doesn't see it, then get me over. Nobody had the faintest idea. Nobody was interested. Nobody was bothered. That should not, there should have been no VAR interference in that whatsoever. And for the fact that it took 4 or 5 minutes for that to be brought to their attention, it's killing football.
It really is, isn't it? That's the cusp of it. It is destroying the enjoyment of football fans.
But see, if you actually look at the incident, and it's actually quite embarrassing. Not one Aberdeen player was claiming for it. It was absolutely no player. They all heads down. We're 1-0 down. We're walking away. To me, that tells you everything. Not one player is looking for it. However, for somebody to then say, oh, I might get involved here and kill the game, that's re-refereeing it. That's ridiculous. Absolutely shocking. And the VAR at the time was Stephen McLean, which I thought Stevie would be a bit more savvy about him, to be honest.
Yeah, it's very frustrating. I appreciate Motherwell fans' frustrations on it, especially because as you come to later in the game, they then have what they feel hardened by another handball call. Graham Shinney, ball struck a certain part of his arm. We can go into the IFAB and about sleeve lines and diagrams, etc., but it strikes the arm, and then his question over consistency of decisions comes up in the same game. And when you see the image of it, Willie Collum is looking right at it and waves it away. So I can appreciate that, because we've seen them given. Why is he not given that one? Because of the inconsistencies in each game and what VAR decides is getting involved in and not, people don't know what handball is. It's so convoluted, open to opinion, that we don't know at all. No, it's like you're waiting for some kind of formal justification or reason or some kind of textbook to come that says that is and that isn't. It's just been interpreted however it is on the day, and it's leading to these inconsistencies and frustrations.
The Shinney one brings into sharp relief one of the most ludicrous handball changes, and there's been lots of ludicrous handball changes. One of the most ludicrous handball changes when they invented this T-shirt line. Who the hell came up with that idea that if it hits you above the T-shirt line, that's hitting you on the body, and if it hits you below the T-shirt line, then it's a handball? That's what happened in the Shinney incident. A complete and utter piece of nonsense. I agree that wasn't a penalty, but it's not a penalty because we've said it so many times. Shinney didn't have a clue. That wasn't a handball. That shouldn't be anywhere near a handball. But no more so than the one that the Motherwell were on the receiving end of. It's an utter shambles, a complete shambles.
And it seems as if we're just having the same conversation every week, because it was a lot at Hearts in the last time round. It's opinions, but it's the VAR opinions, you know. It's not a clear and obvious anymore. It is interventions for the sake of having an opinion on an incident. It wasn't what clubs were told it was going to be.
Nope.
Clubs and fans deserve that the VAR, we spoke about this before, clubs and fans deserve the VAR they were told they were getting, not what they've got at the moment, and there's a big difference. And as we go by the weeks, we'll pick into that a wee bit more what we actually mean by that. But we're seeing it. We're seeing the re-refereeing of games. We're seeing inconsistent interventions. We're seeing blatant obvious being ignored. And because you don't then get any reasoning, it grows more confusion. And confusion leads to conspiracy theories. And we never get to then deal with the real issues at hand. The inconsistent, underperforming referees. They're not facing demotion. When they perform badly, they end up with big games again because we're so caught up on the incidents and the everything that goes on in the media and that week and the pundits' views on it, and it just becomes noise and you never get to go straight to the central issue, which is the refereeing performance is never consistent these days and the referees don't appear to be held to the same account as they used to. In terms of if they may have had a bad game, they would go and face a lower league fixture. They seem to just get the big game next week. We said that last week, that there's particular referees that are just getting kept on the big games. And on that subject, we actually had, on the next game that we're actually going to discuss, Kilmarnock and Mirren, we actually had one of our younger referees coming through into that game and had an excellent game and made some great big decisions, and that we'll come to. But he'll probably not see a big game for a few weeks again because we're at that bottleneck where the class A's are sitting there already and that they're making mistakes, but there's no recompense for that. They will just get a big game again, and we've got some talented young referees coming through that can't get through because of that bottleneck. There has to be some kind that changes their guys. There has to be, to be fair to these guys that are coming through, and also to hold to account poor decision making away from what the laws actually say.
It's always been that way. It's always been that way. If we look back to in our bygone day, you'd have Hugh Dallas, Willie Young, Stuart Dougal, Kenny Clark, John Rowbotham, John Underhill. They guys won't stay there forever. So you've got to breed new guys in. Ross Hardy was absolutely fantastic yesterday. I thought he was very strong in the decision he made. Not even strong. He was correct in the decision he made at Kilmarnock's Man. It was a penalty. Absolutely. Mally Watkins was brought down. He's put it on. But Steve and I have been involved in that bottleneck where we've tried to come through. Steve made it higher than I did. I didn't make it as high as he did, probably because I had too big a gob on me sometimes. But it's like a football team. You cannot have the old guard there all the time. Celtic, Rangers, Aberdeen, whoever. You've got guys coming through the youth system who are then going to prolificate your first team. Exact same as refereeing. You've got to get these guys in. You've got to encourage them. You've got to dip them in, dip them out. Give them that opportunity. I think I don't think it's been managed particularly well. And to reference what you said with same people getting the same high profile appointments, I won't mention a name, but we all know who we're talking about. Every week, can you tell me a game that particular individual hasn't been involved in a controversial decision?
No. I can't. Yep. Not this season. I mean,
any season.
Yeah, I mean, but even at that, with three episodes, and there's been three instances where we've discussed that individual's involvement in games and errors. They really should face a lower division fixture until they shape up and let somebody else come through. But we know that's not.
For certain people, there are no consequences. And there's more than one on the list. And we keep saying it, you know, week in, week out, these people are making the same mistakes. The same mistakes happen week in, week out by the same people, and they keep getting the same games. I'm so, so pleased that we had a relative newbie, and we're saying relative because he's obviously been refereeing for 10 years before he gets to this stage. But showing that we do have talented people coming through. But they can't get through because the old guard are there and the old guard are untouchable. But, you know, the one thing that I'll say, again, in mitigation for refs are not rebellious sort. So the fact that the same mistakes are happening week in, week out, with no consequence to anybody, because it's the same faces, that tells you that they are refereeing and they're interpreting things the way that the SFA are telling them. Because if they agreed with us that some of these things are howlers, then you wouldn't, in any job in the world, if you kept making howlers, something would happen to you. But there is no consequence.
And I spoke to Des about that last week, because I happen to know some people who actually do the reporting work, you know, that they actually go around reviewing referees, doing the reports. So I know that it's not that the referees are left to it. They are watched, they're observed. Those reports go back into the refereeing department on their performance. But it felt as if that what happens to those reports now, nothing, because you don't see anything happen with it. And well, therefore, they're paying people to go and observe referees, knowing that there's no intention of doing anything about what they actually report back. In fact, it feels as if that's just really for anyone that's below the top grade. You know, even though they have to still do it on the top grade, but it's really for the top, it's for everybody below, in some cases, to keep them down.
It's not just the top grade, it's the top, in inverted commas, people in the top grade. That, as we've said, there's just no consequence to them. You can bet Des and I have been on the receiving end of things like that with us. There is consequence to you, but some people are just untouchable.
Yeah, that's a sad state of affairs.
Steve, you and I have been in dressing rooms when we've come in from a game, and with a particular couple of individuals, the observer is actually listening to them rather than the referee listening to him.
Yeah. That's maybe a topic for a different discussion, because we've got a plethora of stories that we could tell.
Yeah, don't let it all at once. Keep it for the book. Kilmarnock versus St Mirren. You've quite rightly pointed out that the penalty award, was it Ross Hardy? Is that the young referee's name? So, had a very good game, I felt. There was nothing very much controversial in the game other than the penalty decision. It was the correct call. There was a barge on Marley Watkins, straightforward penalty. Referee called it, didn't need VAR, made a great decision. Other than that, didn't see anything else controversial in the game. I believe that there was, from reading a report, that there was a St Mirren call for penalty 38 minutes, but it's not made the highlight reels, so I've not been able to see it. If St Mirren fans do have a copy of that footage, please add it on Twitter to us, and we will review it and comment on it, but we've not got it to look at because it never featured in Sportscene, never featured on Sky Sports' highlights either. Good performance from Kilmarnock. Big win, 5-2. Wow. I say, we follow all the clubs on our X account, and when I was on looking at the feed yesterday, the Kilmarnock feed, and I've never seen a football feed like that. I think whoever's in charge of Kilmarnock social media, thank you very much for the laughs yesterday, because it was literally like they were going, oh, this can't be, oh, what? It's happened again. What's going on here? And then it was like, fucking hell, what? You know, just absolutely lost the plot. Like, it's like the profession, any professionalism and passion just burst through. Anyway, the overexcitement, it was just great observing. Kilmarnock under Dennett McInnes, what can you say? They're absolutely solid in defence, core right through the team, pace, width, energy up front, having a great season. Got to think McInnes is probably going to be one of the contenders for manager of the year.
Oh, he must be up there. I know, depending which one of the big two win the league, you think they would get it, but Derek McInnes has just worked wonders, and there's at least one other team in the league must be ruined that they let him go. And Aberdeen supporters must be wishing they could go back to the time where they were lambasting him for being boring. I'm sure they would much rather be boring and third than going through what they're going just now. I think he's been fantastic.
Yeah, I think Aberdeen fans would take Willie Muller right now, to be fair. But Des, Kilmarnock under McInnes again, anything else? I know that you know Dale quite well.
Yeah, I know. To be fair, I think Aberdeen fans would take our Willie right now before they take Willie Muller, to be honest. I think, listen, where's Derek been? And look at every job he's done. St Johnston, down at Bristol, he was dealt with a bit of a severe hand. He's come back up. Look at the time he spent at Aberdeen. He's not spent a particular amount of great money. He's went down to Kilmarnock. For me, I think he's the best manager in Scotland, to be honest. And when Ange left, I thought Ange was particularly good. I would put Derek up there with Philip Clement. I think he's been very impressive since he's come in. But nobody can deny what he's done, he's done down there. To be 2-0 down to win 5-2 in a team that spent no money, that's fantastic. Andy, absolutely fantastic.
Andy lost his assistant manager to Dundee.
Yeah, well, I know Tony as well through friends. So I think he's been great, and he's brought Paul Sheeran in with him, ex St John's then, ex Arbroath manager. I think Derek just reinvents himself. I can't have a bad word to say about him.
The next game after then, gents, is Celtic and St Johnstone. And obviously the big talking point that's been on social media is about this handball on the line. What's your views on this one? You've got you, Des, first this time.
It's not a handball. It's not a handball. How can you be expected to remove your hand from a ball hitting you from, I don't know, Steve, what, 3 yards? Uh-huh. 2 or 3 yards? How can you be expected to remove your hand? And to be fair to the boy Robinson, he actually tried to remove his hand from that situation. So, no, I'm absolutely quite happy with that. Not a problem at all. Quite happy with Ewan's decision and VAR decision. No penalty.
Steve?
Oh, yeah, pretty much. And I know we've all seen things given and intent has been removed from the handball. But as you say, the ball was just blotted. Not a straight arm, but it was blotted from a couple of feet away. And God knows these reactions, but he did try and turn away and put his arm behind his back at the same time. So, no, never. It maybe hit him on the arm, but the ball's got to be somewhere. So not in a million years. And fair play to Ewan and whoever was on VAR, that they had the sense not to touch that. They're more, and they are, again, relatively junior in their Cat 1 life. But they're put to shame, a lot of guys much more experienced than them. I thought that was a cracking call.
I thought it was a great decision. Because I think if you start giving things like that, football's done. And you spoke a couple of weeks ago about if you want a penalty these days, it doesn't matter if you're Ronaldo or Messi. If somebody blitters the ball at you 100 miles an hour into the box from the D, it's a good chance it's going to hit one of you and hit an hand or an arm, and a penalty is going to be given. And that makes a farce of everything about football. It really does. It ruins the game. You're right. Point blank range. Has tried to tuck his arm under out of the way rather than bringing it out. Struck his elbow. And if it is given, then there's a chance it's going to be a red card. And if you're that St Johnstone player who's had a ball struck at you from a yard away and it's a penalty and you're sent off for that, you would be incensed. And no wonder why you would be incensed if that was given in a red card.
No, if you give that, then it has to be a red card. It has to be. There's no way around it. But again, fair play to Ewan. And forgive me, I don't know who was on VAR.
It was Chris Graham.
Chris Graham. So again, relative youngsters in their Cat 1 life. I just wish some of their more senior colleagues had as much common sense as they do.
The only other talking point in that game, and this is just going to be a common theme as well, offside. We don't have the technology from the Champions League that's firing lasers across the pitch and provides a perfect image of where people's bodies were. We still are relying on camera angles and lines, and in some stadiums where the cameras are situated, you're getting shown an offside decision from this angle across a line going like that. And the TV companies are quite bad for only giving you 2 seconds to look at it and bringing it back down. Some of the lines we've spoken about before, you don't know whether they're attaching things to different parts of the body. The one at Celtic Park yesterday, I believe it was Forrest down the line. He's showing you the line, and I think his toe's offside. And when we're starting to get down to that level of detail for why that's offside, where do you even start?
Again, it's gone down the route of they're looking for a cause not to allow a goal or not to allow an attacking phase of play. It's an absolute joke. I know the English Premier League have got all singing, all dancing, but I've said it before, we've got the Fisher Price version up here, and it's not helping our guys. And it's true. It's absolutely true. We've got the Fisher Price version, and somebody's sitting there going, "Oh, right, can I make that line all right?" No.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, go and do it. Yep, go and do it. Do it right.
So we've got a champagne desire, but a gingy bottle budget.
Absolutely.
Cremola foam.
We talked about the technology working. The technology for everything else works, but for offside, it doesn't. Why bother putting those stupid dotted lines in? And the dotted lines themselves are relatively huge. Where it's coming from the players, you can't see where on the phone. And some of the lines that we see, you know, they don't even run parallel to the box and things like that. So as we say, it's either groundsman with dodgy line-making ability, or it's just not worth the effort. Fine, use it for people who are clearly, in inverted commas, offside, and the lino might have missed it. But for things like that, where it's, you know, a toenail, where it's, you know, half of somebody's boot, might just be offside. Sorry, our technology is not good enough to pick that up. So again, going back to the clear and obvious, that one yesterday, no idea if it was offside or onside. No idea at all. Defy anybody to tell you one way or the other. But the technology is so bad in that instance that you can't be calling things like that offside. It's a nonsense.
It's ruining the game, because I spoke about this last week when you were away, Stephen. It was just Des and I saying that imperfections what makes football beautiful. It's these moments that create history and make us want to watch football. When you chase perfection and try to get everything so precise and perfect, you ruin it. You ruin the excitement. It becomes more about aesthetically pleasing and pleasing everybody than rather than sometimes things go for you and sometimes they go against. But that's the roller coaster of football.
Yep. Absolutely. It doesn't take away from the fact that who was it? One of the McIlvannies. Football's the most unpredictably fluid ball game in the world. Leave it at that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's not forget it's a contact sport as well, which we'll go into the next game here. We've got the Ross County versus Hearts game. We've got two talking points. We'll talk about the first one, which is the goal being chopped off for offside from a free kick. Great free kick. Lauren Shankland is ruled offside by a VAR call. Referee looks at it and chops a goal.
Correct.
Des, you want to take from here, because we've spoken about this one and you're quite strong-pointed on it.
Yeah, so at that moment in time, after it happened, I was actually on the phone to a friend, Mark Donaldson, who works for ESPN in the USA, who was actually in the home of the ex-Hearts coach, Robbie Nielsen. I'm not blowing trumpets here. Just happened to call me. And they both agreed with me, what is Lauren Shankland think he's going to gain from doing that? He's being in the eye line of the goalkeeper. If you're going to do that, fine, absolutely. But see, before the boy strikes the free kick, get out the road. Mm-hmm. All you've done is you've absolutely humped your team from a goal. And then you're straight back in the game. So, yeah, not a problem with that at all. It was offside.
He's starting position, though. If he stayed where he was, he'd be all right, wouldn't he? It's the fact that he has actually moved. I think that's been his downfall, because he actually has moved as the free kick's going to be taken. He has actually then come into the line. I think if he had stayed where he was, rather than shifting at that point, it might have been all right.
No, if he'd stayed where he was still in the line of vision of the ref, the keeper, and you can see from behind the keeper's kicking round Shankland to see what was going on. If he had, stand there if you want, that's fine. But you get out of the way, even when he's starting his run, get out the road. Anklund, he's an experienced enough player. He knows fine what he was doing there. He could have stood anywhere. That goal, that kick was going in. What a fantastic free kick. Absolutely, that was going in. But Shankland ruined it. He thought he was pulling a fly one, but he just ruined the day for Hearts. And what a fantastic free kick that was.
Was it Haring that struck the free kick? Is that right? Is it Peter Haring?
I thought it was a fullback.
I can't remember his name. It wasn't Haring.
Name escapes me.
Absolutely phenomenal free kick. Great dead ball striker. As a shame, I think you owe Shankland owes him a pint. That was, I would think, I'd be quite upset.
I think I can't understand how Stephen A. Smith was angry after it and going, wait a minute, I'd be angry at Shankland. Don't be angry at the officials. It was an offside all day.
Does that follow Stephen Naismith's whole career, and I can never tell when he's happy or angry.
I don't think he can either.
I think it's the same look. That was just deflection. That's all it was.
Yeah.
You fight.
Angry about the performance, and we know that managers do that. And we spoke about that when it was the Kilmarnock result the other week, and McInnes was having a go at the sending off. Managers say things in the heat of the moment after games. They're working in high pressure environments, and sometimes what they'll do at full time is deflect the attention away from themselves and the performance of the team. And they'll blame referees, they'll blame pundits, they'll blame everybody that won't take ownership for themselves. It's just part of what we have up here.
Yeah. That's the easy way out.
That's Janklin's fault.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I think he does owe that lad a pint. The next one's Shankland gets booked for diving. And I think I'll start this one off if that's all right. The ball's coming out to Lauren Shankland. He's got his back to the defender. There's posturing going on. Shankland's in his receiving position. The defender's got his arm up under Shankland's armpit. To restrict his movement, he's not really touching him. There's nothing really illegal that looks to be going on. The defender, the way that he's standing, has his leg out. Shankland has got the eyes only on the ball, receives the ball and goes to turn. As he turns, he's gone over the defender's leg. It's not a dive, but it's not a penalty. Contact sport, like we talked about before on these types of incidents, it's just one of those, but I can't understand why the referees booked Shankland for diving. He got straight back up. We never protested for it. I just felt a very harsh decision. Just wave it for whatever it was. It was a nothing incident. I didn't understand the booking in that. But it wasn't a penalty for me either. Any different views on that one?
No, just whatever the saying is, it's a football incident. But, you know, we've all done it. The ref gets one look at it, and especially when VAR's not involved and they shouldn't be involved. He gets one look at it. He's convinced that he's seen Shankland taking a dive. He's called it wrong, pure and simple. We've all done it, but there was nothing in that. And fair play to Shankland, he went down and bounced straight back up. No claiming, no looking for it, no nothing. He wasn't even looking at the ref, he was looking for where the ball was. The ref just called it wrong.
Yeah, totally agree. I'm actually quite surprised Grant Evren ran in with the yellow card because he was quite quick with it. To me, it was just two people coming together. As Steve said, a football incident, not a yellow card. I think you can. And what I wouldn't like to see is if that yellow card then recriminates him later on in the season and he misses a game because a referee making a wrong decision.
Yeah, and the way that Shankland plays his game, he can pick up the odd yellow card, so that probably is going to come down to something like that. Probably then be talking about this incident when that actually happens and he's serving a ban. I know it's often said about, and I'm wondering if there's any truth in this, and you are probably better placed to answer this. Sometimes a player's reputation follows them, and when a referee's looking at something, they might actually give that some thought, because I don't think that Shankland's that type of player. To dive, I've not seen anything from him where I'm going, oh, he's dived there. I was wondering if a referee, would you actually consider that if a player's had a reputation and it's getting started in the media that they're a diver, and then they do it on you, are you less likely to give them the penalty? Are you more likely to book them? Is it a factor? Would it be a factor for referees?
Yeah. I'm not aware of anybody that's been that's fallen into that. You fall into it. But some people are gifted divers. Some people are gifted cheats. But I don't think that Shankland's got that reputation. You know, I certainly don't think so. But somebody like Neymar, if we're going to name names, wow. You know, one to the other.
Go for the rich guy
with the money.
What gives Neymar or gave Neymar a decision for him is beyond me. The guy is despicable. But I don't think that you go out with a preconceived idea. Clearly not if we're using him as an example. But I don't think any one of us go out with a preconceived idea that we're going to be doing somebody because we know he's going to be diving. And certainly not in Lauren Shankland's case. There was nothing in that.
Okay, guys. So that's all the weekend's games covered because we obviously had a call-off today. And I've been quite vocal on my use on X about where responsibility really lies here because a Premiership club has just had its fourth call-off for its pitch not being ready this season. A fourth call-off. And John Nelms, who's the chief executive or owner or whatever they call him at Dundee these days, is on Sky Sports after that call-off. Number one, he hasn't apologised to fans that have made their way, and that's not just Rangers fans, that's Dundee fans that travel into Dundee for the game. On a Sunday morning, which means that they probably factored in what happens on a Saturday night, what childcare they might have to have for the Sunday morning, how they're getting there and the cost of that. There's no apology. It was an immediate deflection on, oh, we wanted the game ahead and it's the referee's fault because he's made the decision. The first thing that you do is you're providing a service to a customer as a football club. The customer's your football fan. The first thing that he has to do is apologise before he says anything else. I found that really difficult. The first thing that he wanted to go into was how they wanted more time and what they wanted. How about saying, we're really sorry that this happened. We know this is the fourth time. We're going to do X, Y and Z to try and fix this and stop happening again. Didn't do that. And when he didn't do that, that got my back up. And it got my back up even further when Tony Docherty then gives his interview and repeats what his chairman or his chief executive says before it. Still no apology to fans, still putting on to the referee and the pitch inspection and the fact that no further time would be given. The schedule comes out, the TV have booked the time slots for that game. If your pitch is not ready, the responsibility is on you as a football club. It's written in the constitution of the SPFL. I've posted on X earlier today, H10 and H11, I believe, was the rules, and that's about, you know, you must have the right filtration systems, etc., to deal with flooded water. See this? It was torrential rain. It's been torrential rain for 6 months, guys. We've been living in Scotland with rain non-stop for about 6 months. That's not an excuse. It's a fourth call-off. Take some responsibility. Take some ownership. I have to question why the SPFL have had to wait for now a fourth occasion before they probably do anything. Because after, you know, maybe the second one, they should have invoked that H11 that says that they can step in, intervene, set out a schedule of works that the club must carry out, and that they can actually sanction, etc., or they reserve the rights for sanction as a member. That, for me, is the SPFL owe football fans an apology because they haven't held the club to the standards that they set out beforehand. Dundee owe an apology because that pitch should have been ready. There's no excuses for weather. There's no excuses for weather when third division, second division, championship games went on hours before without issue and their pitches passed pitch inspection. There can be no reason at the top level in Scottish football why your pitch wasn't ready. I think you need to apologise to your fans. I think you need to apologise to the travelling fans. And I think you need to do something for them. You need to do something about your pitch so it doesn't happen again. How about that? Just take some responsibility.
James, have you got two crash mats either side of that chair?
I think I'm going to need it. Honestly, I'm not pretending I speak for every football fan, but what I will say is, as a football fan and the football fan representative on this podcast, because my views are not one of a referee, it's bringing it as a football fan. But we're not cattle.
Entirely correct.
Cattle, we're not cattle, but that's how we're kind of viewed in the eyes of the club's viewers, where the authorities that run the game viewers. I know some guys and work with some guys that spend 75% of what they earn on the football team, on shirts and tickets and travelling to European games and travelling to away cup games and following the national team at major tournaments. They spend most of their life and their money on it. The least you can do for them is offer them an apology when you're a club and things don't go right. It wasn't us, it was them. Just please, can we have the relevant bodies take some responsibility, issue an apology to these hard-working people that are paying for it, that put money in your pockets at the end of the chain?
But it's always been this. It's always somebody else's fault. And then, you know, in my day, it was always Motherwell's pitch. You knew that you were going to have trouble. But Motherwell were forced eventually. I don't know if they did it voluntarily. But Motherwell's pitch now is absolutely fantastic.
It's probably the best in the SPL, to be fair.
We live in Scotland. We get torrential rain. And I don't know if they had covers on. I don't know what they did. But the home team is responsible for calling pitch inspections. If they had any doubt at all, because we've had torrential rain for 6 months and that their drainage is insufficient or whatever it is, then they could have called somebody out last night to have a look at it. They could have called somebody out before. And to try and blame Don and one of the local refs because they didn't give them enough time, utter nonsense. It's shambolic. And it treats football fans with utter contempt. And same for one of the other teams in Glasgow routinely. And we all know people, Dundonians living abroad, probably saved up to come and watch that game as well. But every week in, week out, there's people going to watch Celtic Rangers from out with these shores. And they get, what we're going to do, halt the ferries for them to come over? Oh, wait a wee minute, Dundee want an extra half an hour? Utter nonsense. I agree with every word that you said, James.
They'll reschedule that game for a midweek on a Wednesday.
Aye.
Right? So that's fine. See if it's Sunday morning, you travel through, it's part of your weekend. Good chance that'll come to a Wednesday night rearranged game, and a lot of people that were really looking forward to that game won't be able to make it now. They won't be compensated for that.
No.
They won't. There'll be no repercussions, no compensation. There seems to be a culture now of lacking responsibility. Nobody wants to take responsibility. I could go off on a tangent for our guys, and I know we don't have it, but there's weak leadership at the head of our leagues. There's weak leadership at the head of our bodies. And they need to begin to understand that the reason that they're there is because myself and my fellow football fans put the money in that puts them there. And that when people march with their feet because they want and demand change and they do it in unison, it's a very powerful thing. First thing that the clubs need to do in such situation is don't deflect, take some ownership, apologise. Put yourself in that person's shoes, apologise. It's the number one rule of customer service. If I treated customers that way, we wouldn't be in business very long.
Absolutely. That's your lifeline. That's who pay the wages, so to speak. We go down that route. But I think for anybody to criticise match officials for putting that game off is entirely wrong.
That was what really good. I mean, you've got Chris sitting on Twitter, right, bringing Don
Robertson's
name into it.
Absolutely ridiculous.
We know what that's really driven by, why he's mentioned that particular referee. He's looked for any opportunity to mention that referee's name because he didn't agree with certain decisions in another game recently. But it's nothing to do with Don Robertson. Don Robertson, shortly on after that, on Sky Sports, explaining the process, the procedure, what was agreed with the clubs, the SFA and the SPFL, for when that inspection would take place. It's nothing to do with time he turned up. He just did what he was told to do. And as much as we'll be critical of referees when they get decisions wrong, when these pundits point the finger at referees and it's unfair, we're going to call it out.
See if Chris Sutton's booked to do the 6:06 show with Robbie Savage, and he has to be at BBC Studios or in his house at 5:55. Right, he's there. Don Robertson's booked to be at that ground at that time. Don Robertson can only make a decision on the viability of that pitch being able to play at that moment in time. He can't say, well, do you know what? I'll push it back, I'll push it back, I'll push it back, I'll push it back. Sky are filming that game. They've got a window for that game. So Sky will be pushing for it. But wait a minute. See if Don Robertson says, right, play. And again, that stupid, stupid comment said, I think it was Michael Stewart, said, let the players play, let them decide. Wait a minute. If somebody breaks their ankle, who's the person that's culpable for it? It's Don Robertson. That moment in time, when Don Robertson has made that decision, quite correctly says, the pitch is not in a fit condition to play that game. Do you know what? See if you want to play, you go and play, but there's no referee here, and you go on, mate.
But you can imagine the very people who will criticise Don because he's, right, okay, the team's wanted to play it. Tavernier catches his studs in one of the and gets a double compound fracture of his leg, never plays football again. One of the things. They're baying for Don's blood for that. It's an absolute nonsense. And people who say stupid things like that, we're trying to say, I've talked about referees in the public and press club. That's setting people, and we've talked on here about the brainless and the hard of thinking. They're laying that down as Don's fault.
It's wrong.
It influences people's opinion. The same way sometimes when pundits say things, they'll say things like, I don't know what the laws of the game say here, but in my opinion, it's not a penalty. Again, I don't know what the laws say, but my view is it's not bringing in the conversation, the argument. It's putting your opinion on people who just agree with your opinion. And it's not based on any laws. And it's actually shocking sometimes when I hear pundits and what they say, and they give opinions, but they often start that with, I don't know what the laws of the game actually say, but here, I'm going to tell you this anyway, and you take that away and go and spread that around social media.
What they're doing, James, is they're playing to a gallery. They're playing to a gallery for their section supporters, for people who want to be with them. Excuse my French, but fuck them.
But that set up the brain dead. Do you think Don has done that?
You think for yourself. Yep.
That busload who have missed the ferry or have got the ferry and have to get straight back again, that busload are blaming Don because of what people who should know better are saying about
it. It's really unfair, Steve. It's really unfair. As I said, you know, when referees get decisions wrong, we're going to be open and criticise them on here. But when pundits are having goes, and what's driving those opinions, we're just going to call it out because there's no filter for us. We can see it. You're bang out of order. What you're saying, first of all, go and learn the laws of the game, right? Because it'll help you become a better pundit. And seeing things such as just let the players decide if they want to play. What's the point of having a referee? What's the point of having any rules? Shall we just go down and have games played on a council pitch?
That's silly. Do you know what? You've just absolutely nailed it. So if the players say, we'll play. Well, do you know what? Just go and get Philip Clement to referee the first half, Tony Docherty referee the second half, get a club linesman. It's not right. The game is not legible to be played on that pitch.
It's an utter nonsense.
Game's off. Utter nonsense. Yep. And I'll guarantee you, what's the first thing, as Steve Critchley said, and as I've highlighted, if James Tavernier or, I don't know, Scott Tiffany went and broke an ankle, who's the first person they're blaming?
Referee. Can't win. Who would be a referee? I said that to you. Who would want to be a referee? Don't answer that. That's another long conversation. We're going to wrap up, guys. We've only got a few minutes left. Want to mention we've got the competition that's up on the X page. It's the pinned tweet now. Kindly, Roxby Group coming on as our new sponsors have given us a £30 voucher for Amazon. We don't need your personal details. We're just asking you simply follow us. Retweet that tweet with a competition, and the 29th of March we're going to pick a winner from the retweet queue. I know that and appreciate that some football fans don't have their real profiles on and they might be reluctant about giving personal information, so the delivery on that is going to be by email. It is open to UK residents, so you would receive the voucher by email, so no personal details required. Please take part. Thanks again to Roxburgh Group for the sponsorship and for getting involved. Thank you very much to you both for your time. Thanks to everyone that's checked out the videos and followed us on X and on YouTube and subscribed on YouTube. Please like and subscribe on YouTube if you enjoy this. It's your support that's going to allow us to continue developing this. We've got some exciting stuff happening over the next few weeks because we're about to update all of our technology. I've been very busy over the last week getting all done and researching. We're moving on to different platforms where I've got everything shiny bright coming. Please continue to support and thank you very much for tuning in. Take care all. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Cheers.
Cheers, guys.